Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante, along with Sports Illustrated Big Ten writer Dustin Schutte. Dustin, how are we doing this week?
I'm doing great, Jim. How are you?
Dustin. How could you even ask me that question? Yeah. One of my all-time worst sports weekends ever.
I should have known to rephrase my questioning and massage it in there, because we talked about during the break you had the worst sports weekend ever. I should have thought that, but we had enough of a good conversation that it left my mind before we actually started recording.
We had Penn State with the tough loss, and long-time listeners, even short-term listeners, also know I'm a Mets fan. They got eliminated last day of the season because, Dustin, they couldn't beat the stinking Marlins even.
Yeah, that's a heartbreaker. The fish ruined plans for everybody. At least you're with me, Jim, in no playoff land.
Dustin, a Braves fan. We will get to football in just a second. One last baseball question for you. Which is better? The way the Braves essentially were eliminated, what, back in April or May, the way they played, and you could dismiss them? Or hanging on by a thread and suffering, you know, these paper cuts every day until the very last day when they're eliminated? Which is worse?
Yeah, so unpopular opinion, probably I will take being done by April or May, or April, but legitimately probably July. I will take that, because then I feel like if they're still in the hunt and I've watched all these games I put a lot of investment in July, when they were playing terribly, and this is me being fair weather fan, I'd totally admit that, I'd be like, oh, the Braves are on? Yeah, I'll sit down and watch a game. But I wasn't rearranging my schedule like I otherwise might to watch them play.
Just not invested in it anymore. Well, I had prior Mets ownership, which was really bad, infamously said at one point, we want to play relevant games in September. And which the Met fans took it as, oh, you just want to be close, finish second, you're fine with it, out of the playoffs. But as long as there's hope in September, it means fans are attending and so on. And I was more okay with it because, yeah, keep me interested through the year. Yes, I would want to win the playoffs, World Series, all of that, but at least keep me interested. This wasn't keeping me interested. This is just torturing me every day, day in, day out. To throw in a good win in there, and I think, hey, maybe this is it. They've turned it around. So now I'm using that as my segue to football, Dustin, and Penn State, which played three out-of-conference games, and it's like, you know what? They're going to put it together one of these weeks, and you know what? Maybe it's not the out-of-conference game. They're holding it for this week against Oregon. Huge, huge matchup with conference and national significance. And you know what? All those little things that we saw in the out-of-conference game, well, they're still around. They're still a factor. And I'm really glad, though, to get you on the show this week, Dustin, to talk about this game, because I think those of us here in Nittany land, we can't see the forest for the trees right now. Okay, it's up to you with your national wisdom to take a look at this game. First, let's not look at the repercussions and the blame, but first let's just talk about the game itself. Anything strike you? What's your takeaway from the actual game itself?
Well, first of all, I have to say, you may have picked the wrong guy if you're looking for somebody to to find the silver lining in all of this, because I was like, and you know, Jim, I have no real tie-in to Penn State or anybody else in the Big Ten. So I tend to be pretty level-headed, but I was angry after watching this game. But first of all, we'll get to your question. This was, to me, and I'll be interested to get your take and what the fans think of this, typical James Franklin game. You get 70 yards of offense in the first half. You finish with less than 300. I feel like he took the playbook out of Andy Kotelnicki's hands again, as he is, as this is wont to do in these type of situations, played not to lose, made a great, this is the frustrating part to me, Jim. You saw how good Penn State's offense could be in the fourth quarter when they're down 17-3, they get the ball moving, they get into the end zone twice. And this is not dismissing that Oregon is really good. Just play that way the entire 60 minutes. And I think Penn State, I don't know that they win by like 21 points, but maybe it's a 10-point game. Maybe it's a 2-touchdown game. It just felt like the same thing we complain about every freaking year, which is they play not to lose. They're too conservative. I didn't think Drew Aller played terrible, but certainly in this type of game, not good enough to win.
I think that's a very good evaluation, and it hits one of – sometimes, Dustin, I feel like I'm ahead of the curve in some of this analysis, okay?
Okay.
And I always am fascinated when I read something from national media or even, you know, Penn State beat writers, and I'm thinking, I said that a year ago. And one of the I think it was Kirk Herbstreit who put out that same, you know, they don't play to win, they play not to lose, too conservative. I went back last year, I was saying it, and even prior to that, because if you look at some of their games against Ohio State, which their real nemesis, James, is like 1-10 against them. And I say, you know what? Ohio State always comes in much more talent if you at least base it on recruiting every year.
Yeah.
They were the much more talented team. Everybody loses to Ohio State. But James will get a 10-point lead and then sits on it. You know, he just wants to hold the lead. And even a year ago, they played Ohio State, and we saw that inside the 5-yard line, ran it up the middle 3 times in a row, which they wouldn't have done against anyone else. But they also, and people don't talk about it, in the first half, final possession, he kind of milked the clock, afraid to give it back to Ohio State with that, yep, with enough time to score. Against any other team, he would be, you know, firing away, looking to score himself. And he doesn't play the big games that way. And I took a look at the box score and statistics from the game on Saturday, and they just get so conservative on first down. Yes, you have a good offensive line. Yes, you have these good running backs, but that's what the defense is looking to stop. How about throw the ball on first down? And then once you establish you're willing to throw the ball, running becomes easier, Dustin.
Yeah. I mean, when you're able to mix it up and keep the defense off balance, that's the entire goal of your offense. And certainly you want to establish the run, but it's not, what do you say, Jim? Run, pass, punt. That's usually, yes, the first possession of a Penn State football game. And yes, you can't have that every single drive. Yes, you want to establish the run, but that means you have to mix it up on first and second down sometimes. Yeah, sure, you can run it a few times or mix in different designs. Maybe have some extension of the run game. And again, to me, this is so drastically different than what we saw from Penn State when they played Oregon last year. They went into that Big Ten championship game like they had nothing to lose. And I feel like if Penn State just would have played that game, Penn State's defense played well. Oregon wasn't like this lights out team that just came in. It wasn't like Indiana, Illinois a few weeks ago where they were clearly the more talented team. It was, oh, look, Penn State's doing what it always does, which is not being aggressive. I think, again, I can get to the big picture part of this later, but I just can't get past, again, once again, as is the case every year, the defense plays well enough to win this game, and they just couldn't get the off. And I know people are going to talk about the defense there late in the game. Like, obviously, Penn State had a lead in overtime, had a chance to seal the deal, and they couldn't get that one stop. But for 60 minutes, their defense played. If you hold Oregon to 17 points in regulation, you probably feel pretty good about yourself.
You know, this was not on the defense. And they were out on the field for so long. I'm just doing a quick look at time of possession in the first half. Quarter one, 9:58, meaning pretty much 10 minutes. Quarter two, Oregon had it for 9 minutes. Quarter three, over 8 minutes. The defense was just on the field way too much. To expect them to perform well then late in the fourth quarter into overtime, you were asking too much of them. Plus, you know, Penn State with these, you know, three and outs, it just, you can't win that way. And your point about playing in the fourth quarter, this was similar a year ago when they played USC and they got down multiple touchdowns. Mm-hmm. And it's like, hey, Drew, we got to let you go out and win the game for us. And he started chucking the ball all around. And this is the other thing. Interest. I said it last year. Now the rest of the media is catching up with me, Dustin. Drew Aller in the 2-minute offense is so good. Well, how about, and you don't have to play every series that way, but how about one or two? That up-tempo, right. Let him just throw the ball around and not have to think too much. I think he gets in his own head.
I think so, too. And I think what happens is, and I think that the interception at the end of the game was a direct result of this. When you play tepid, when you play scared throughout the course of the game, what does that do to the mentality of your quarterback? Because now, in my opinion, Drew Aller's going out there in overtime down 6 points, and he's saying, don't make a mistake. Don't make a mistake. And what's he do? He throws a pick. I mean, it was a great play by Dylan Thienemann, don't get me wrong, but that was, to me, when he goes out there, that's more on, we've played conservative all game. We're playing not to lose. And now that's in my quarterback's head. When they were down 14 points, he's probably out there thinking, we don't have much of a shot. Let's just go have some fun here. Let's try to see if we can cut into this lead. Playing loose, playing free. And then all of a sudden, it's out there to don't make a mistake. And you set that mentality early because that's how you played for three quarters.
And you mentioned Thienemann did make a wonderful play. But there were also three defenders around receiver, two in front and one behind. There's got to be someone more open than that. All right, that's it for quarter number one. Lots more to go with Dustin Schutte.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Whether a department outing, entertaining your clients, or reconnecting with your family and friends, let Revel XP take the hassle out of tailgating. Simply show up and immerse yourself in the tailgating experience. Full service includes bellhops helping upon arrival and tear down when you're ready to leave. Revel XP elevates your tailgate. Reach out to us directly at 814-933-4100 or go to revelxp.com for more info.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello, and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number two. I'm Jim Galante. He is Dustin Schutte. Dustin, in quarter number one, we talked about the actual Penn State-Oregon game, double overtime loss again for Penn State in a big game. Before we get to the outside things, reactions, and so on, anything else you want to add? In quarter one, we talked about the game itself. Any other thoughts from the game itself that you wanted to share?
Not really. Those were my biggest, I thought those were my biggest takeaways. Was there something that you're hinting at here that I just, no. I just went over my head? Okay.
No, not at all. It was frustrating. I think you hit it with how conservative they were. Just one last number. Through three quarters, Drew Aller was 8 for 16 for a grand total of 62 yards. So when they did throw the ball, they weren't throwing it down the field. Running the ball, first down take, just because I look for stats to support my thinking. They ran the ball 5 times on first down, and that's not counting 2 sacks that occurred on first down, but legitimate ran the ball 5 times for a grand total of 18 yards.
Boy, really racking up the yardage there. Okay, so I'm going to add one more thing then to that. Yeah. So then when they ran 2 men, if he was 8 of 16, that means he was 6 of 9. I don't know the math, 70-plus yards and 2 touchdowns?
Yeah, I had it in fourth quarter. So, you know, if a drive started before, after, whatever. But I had his stats in the fourth quarter was 5 for 7 for 70 yards.
And 2 touchdowns.
And 2 touchdowns, yeah.
Maybe that should be an indication of what you should do. Just saying.
But you know, this has been going on for a while though, Dustin. Even in games that they've won, like I put an Illinois game a year ago, Penn State was the much better team than Illinois. But if you look at the score at halftime, I forget if it was tied or one score difference. It's a game. No, it really wasn't. You let that team stay in the game because, you know, your drives took, you know, 8 minutes and 13 plays, and you were just chipping away at it. And I get it. We want to establish the run. I get that. I truly do. But maybe you need to throw a little bit early. And again, this was a quote I took from Bill Walsh 100 years ago. For youngsters, look them up, okay? Yep. Coach of the 49ers. And he said, easiest down to pass on is first down.
Mm-hmm.
That's the time to do it. And I think especially when you're trying to establish things with Drew Aller, okay, yeah, you could – maybe you just need to pass first in that opportunity. And, oh, by the way, when they – that first quick drive in less than 2 minutes that they scored, went back to pass, first down, over the middle, tight end Luke Reynolds, 9 yards, 2nd and 1. The next play, Catron Allen had his longest run of the game for 19 yards. Just saying. Maybe it was a coincidence, Dustin.
Maybe we should have a clipboard.
Well, I work with Mike Villagrana, who's in the office, in the football building. And I'm just like, Mike, next time you meet with Andy Kotelnicki, tell him that Jim said, and I don't know why he laughs though when I say that. I meant it seriously. Let's move on because there's such reaction to this game from Penn State fans, national media, that you can't get away from. And let's start with James Franklin. There was 17-3. The chant was "Fire Franklin." You could hear it throughout the stadium, Dustin. That is the reaction from Penn State fans, or at least many of them. National perspective, how do you look at that?
Dumb. Now, I'm going to, at some point in this show, I'm going to be very critical of James Franklin, but I still believe he is a very good coach. There are no guarantees, as we've seen with a lot of coaches in the past. You can look at Scott Frost at Nebraska. You can look at Luke Fickell at Wisconsin. Just because you think you have a better candidate doesn't mean you're going to have a better candidate. And fit is so important. So the idea that a guy who has gotten you the Big Ten championship game twice, has won once, just got you into the playoff and made it to the semifinals is crazy. That's what you wanted to do in this new era of college football. I understand you want to win the big game, but or the bigger games. But at the end of the day, it's all about getting into the playoff. And he was able to do that last year. If they're able to go 10-2 again this year, it's just it's crazy behavior to think that they need to fire James Franklin. And that's my stance on that. But on the other side, if I can dive into this a little bit, here's what frustrates me about James Franklin is in these situations, he's talked about whether it's in the moment or after the season, we got to get over the hump. We got to do this. We got to do that. And then usually it feels like he passes the buck on to his offensive coordinator, some sort of assistant coach, a wide receivers coach, fires him, you know, gets him out of town, brings in somebody else, and then you have the same problem. Stop pointing the finger at other people on your staff and start looking at yourself in the mirror. I feel like he's not – like, you can't just keep passing the buck. This offensive thing has been a problem for them for 10 years now in these games. It's a very – it's clearly a James Franklin thing. Obviously, and I don't know if he says, you know what? I'm going to override Andy Kotelnicki on this call. I'm going to override Andy Kotelnicki. Like, the only time it worked, and it's starting to make me believe this, the only time it didn't matter is when he had Saquon Barkley. I don't think Joe Moorhead made a huge difference. I think the fact that they had Saquon Barkley, Trace McSorley, and they blocked one kick on special teams, which made the entire difference for that 2016 season. Penn State is still a very good team. They're going to win 9-10 games every single season, 9-11 games every single season. He doesn't need to be fired. But you can't keep passing the buck and say, well, if we get a new offensive coordinator, if we get a new wide receivers coach, it's not worked. It's the same thing. So you have to point at yourself and say, what am I doing? And I still believe, whether it's true or not, whether he'd ever admit it or not, he's taking too much control over in these big games, especially on the offensive side, and not letting his coordinators actually call the game, and is either overriding them or just taking the clipboard away completely.
I think that's a fair evaluation, and I've often been accused of being a James Franklin apologist because I do think he's doing a lot of things really, really, really well, and I'm not sure there's another guy who could come in and do better. And the fans, you know, they have the right to say what they want. Their obvious frustration, you know, how else can they express it?
Sure.
And I wonder how many of those who were chanting fire Franklin really meant it. I doubt they think it through, like, okay, here's the obvious replacement and things right. would go better. But I do have the criticism of James Franklin of being conservative in these games when he has maybe not either less talent or equal talent. It seems like he goes into a shell, gets conservative with it, instead of firing away. And I thought it was ironic in the Notre Dame game, playoff game last year, where he did go for it with that last possession. He could have played for the tie and gone into overtime, and he chose, hey, let's go for it to win. Now, it backfired on him. And, you know, I wanted to say that was still the right thing to do.
Right.
I truly believe it. But when you play that way, sometimes it's not going to work. Sometimes it will. This conservatism, though, I don't believe will work for you in this game. Now, I do want to ask back to the game a little bit, because I've heard people bring this up since the game when it became 17-16. Need the extra point to tie the game, get it into overtime. Mm-hmm. Should James Franklin have gone for 2 points at that point?
That's, to me, that's gets into the territory. I think we talked about this on this show where coaches overthink and go with the analytics and based on this play, that play. I say no, because if you miss it, it's 50-50 to me. If you go for two and you miss it, everybody's going to be blaming you. And like, why didn't you just get to overtime? In his defense, I think when you think, all right, we got a whiteout crowd. We just scored 2 touchdowns to tie this thing up. We're at home. All of the momentum is in our favor. If we get this thing to overtime, we're going to win the football game. I think he legitimately thought, I thought that. When you have those kind of drives and just demoralize Oregon, you scored first in overtime. You had the lead. So I think that was the right call. But when you lose a game, obviously everybody's going to question everything. I'm not a big fan. If Penn State, let's say they played a tough non-con schedule and they were 2-2 coming into this game, and Oregon's, you know, number three or number six, whatever they were, yeah, go for the win. Go for the win. If you got nothing to lose. But I think the fact that they are and maybe this is contradictory to what I've just criticized James Franklin about, but I think when you have scored 14 straight points, you march down the field, you have the whiteout crowd, home game, all the momentum is on your side. I think kicking the extra point and then saying, I feel really good about our chances in overtime. I think I did agree with that call.
I did also, and I think you hit it, Dustin. Going for it for 2 points, it's as close to 50-50 as it could be. Maybe it's 51-49. Maybe you've had this great play you've been saving up that can make it, you know, 54-46. But the fact is, it's pretty much 50-50. If you're Northwestern playing Ohio State, hey, a 50-50 shot on a two-pointer makes sense, right?
Right, exactly. And the other thing that I don't – maybe this is crazy. There's also another aspect of this, and maybe this is me just overthinking. If Oregon's down one, now they have to be aggressive playing offense, and all they have to do is get in field goal range. If it's tied, more than likely Oregon's going to say, let's not screw this up and let's just play for overtime. Like, I think there's a mental aspect to that as well where they say, well, we have no choice now. Now we've got to go for it. And if they hit one big play, all of a sudden it's over in regulation. If it's tied, I think Oregon may say, okay, we're going to take one or two shots, but we're not going to be ultimate, you know, too aggressive, because if we turn it over, then Penn State, you know, they're going to win the game. So I think that there's a psyche element to this as well.
There was less than a minute left. I think it was 30 seconds. So that was not, and this isn't NFL football where those guys, you know, so quick getting it down the field and kick a 62-yard field goal, you know, to win. And so I very much agreed with it, as you pointed out. You scored the last two touchdowns. You've got the crowd into a frenzy. You have all the momentum in the world. Why give Oregon that 50-50 chance to win the game, you know, in that randomness of a two-point conversion? That is it for quarter number two. Lots more to talk about with Dustin Schutte when we return.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Whether a department outing, entertaining your clients, or reconnecting with your family and friends, let Revel XP take the hassle out of tailgating. Simply show up and immerse yourself in the tailgating experience. Full service includes bellhops helping upon arrival and tear down when you're ready to leave. Revel XP elevates your tailgate. Reach out to us directly at 814-933-4100 or go to revelxp.com for more info.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Dustin Schutte, Sports Illustrated Big Ten writer. I'm Jim Galante. It's quarter number three of our show. And Dustin, a couple controversial plays in this game, and I wanted to hit you up on it. And full disclosure here, Dustin, who covers everything college football, believe it or not, he does not focus only on Penn State, watching it start to finish. So between segments, I asked him about a couple of plays. One, the fumble recovery that was overturned. And we'll talk about that first. Then we'll get to a potential or a non-holding call. First, Dustin, in the second half, there was a play, looked like a game changer. Oregon is going in to score, definitely an easy field goal range, and Oregon fumbled the ball. Penn State recovers, brings it back to at least midfield, and it went to replay. First, I'm going to give you my take, being at the game, watching it live. And the scoreboard showed the replay just of the fumble itself. Well, there was no controversy there.
Right.
But the player went down, almost down, or perhaps down earlier in the play, Watching it live, I thought there was no doubt he was down. I mean, it, body length, everything would look like he was down. So that play went for review. You didn't see it live, but between segments, you did take a look. I want to hear your take on that call.
Yeah, that's one to me where how it's ruled on the field is how it should be upheld after the replay, because there was no definitive evidence that his knee touched the ground. It kind of looks like it may have brushed up against some grass, but I don't think you could tell definitively one way or another that his knee was on the ground. So to me, if you rule that a fumble on the field, I don't know how you overturn it. Had they ruled him down at the time and say no fumble, I don't know how you would have overturned it at that point either. So yeah, I think that Oregon certainly got lucky on that one, because there was no definitive evidence to me when you look at that. And they even zoomed in. I don't know how you look at that and say he's definitely down. It was as close as you could get, but I don't know how you would overturn that.
Well, again, in watching it live, my initial reaction is he was down. Probably if I were an official at that point, I'd blown the whistle. He was down. So I expected that. Then watching the replay, I was like, oh, wait a minute here. I'm not sure he's down. Yeah. My conclusion was a similar to yours, Dustin, which is, you know what? If they had called him down on the field, you got to stick with it.
Yeah.
If they said not down on the field, got to stick with it, because there's not overwhelming evidence there, yet they chose to do it. But it also leads me to this, and I believe we talked about the ACC in their television coverage. They are now letting you in on the conversation that mm-hmm. goes on between the official on the field and those at in the booth. Would this not have been the perfect play to hear that conversation?
Yeah, it would have been, because there's also a chance, and I don't know, I'm assuming that they have access to more angles than we have. At least I would hope so. I don't know that for a fact. So if you have somebody up there who's going through it and say, okay, look, we've got this from a side angle here, and he's clearly, or you know, whatever the case is, he's clearly down, to hear the thought process on that, I think would be critically important to fans, because then you at least get an explanation. Now you get nothing. Yeah. You just get, because we said so, is essentially how it goes. And that doesn't always sit well with fans, especially for some of those controversial calls.
Exactly. And I don't know if you, I could project what that conversation went like. Hey, it's pretty close. He's there. Oh yeah, I forgot. This is Penn State. He was down. I suspect that's the way the conversation went, Dustin.
Hey, you know what? I think that's fair. Yeah.
If you had the history that Penn State has had over the years with Big Ten officials, you might come to that conclusion. That was so close. Again, on the field, if they had called it either way, it would be hard to argue with the officials. And I think that's the part that doesn't sit well with Penn State fans. How could you overturn it? James Franklin made reference to it in his Monday press conference also. That was his question. Was there really enough to overturn it? The other thing that went on last year, we saw a lot of Abdul Carter getting tackled. Okay. It became the point where you almost felt like the officials were saying, these guys have no chance of blocking him. Yeah. So how could we penalize them for holding? Because that's all they have left to do. Now it appears that Danai Dennis-Sutton has taken over the mantle of this, and you can call holding, they say, on every play, but I think a lot of it when it's in the middle of the line, there's just too much traffic, too many bodies, it's hard to see. But when you have an isolated play on the outside, one left tackle, one right defensive end, boy, some of these look blatant. And I think the most obvious one, when you start to be attend the game and fans react instantly as the play is going on, fans see a holding and start reacting while the play's happening. You would think an official who's 10 feet from the actual incident would be capable of calling it. And I don't want to be the Penn State homer here. I asked you to take a look, find it online, take a look at that play. Dustin, give me your honest evaluation of it.
Yeah, I mean, the guy is to the side of Denai Dennis Sutton on the certain play that we watched and has an arm in front and an arm behind. I don't know how. So what I've heard some officials say is if it's not impeding his path to the quarterback, basically, they'll kind of let it go. Well, I mean, that was directly impeding his path to the quarterback because I agree with you. I think they do say holding happens every play, but in the middle of the line, if those guys don't have a chance at the quarterback and you're basically just hand fighting in there, there's no point to call a hold there because that's probably not going to impact the play. But when you have an edge rusher who's probably one of the best in the country at his job, it wasn't like he just shed this defender. That was clearly the guy holding on for dear life, attempting to save his quarterback. You got to call those. Those are the obvious ones that you can't miss. And, yeah. You know, if it's a 30-7 game and you want to let it go, fine, whatever. I don't care that much. But when it's in this type of game, you have to call those because then you're just taking – that's the strength of Penn State is there and has been for a while is their edge rushers. So now you're taking a key strength from Penn State away because you're not wanting to call a hold?
Well, and Dustin, this does not take away from any other criticism we've had about Penn State's offense and James Franklin. Doesn't change that at all. However, it very well could have changed this game. So I'm glad someone as independent as yourself could look at this and verify what I've been saying all along. The Big Ten officials are absolutely the worst in the world. All right, let's move on. I want to ask you, Dustin, Penn State's reaction to this loss is, hey, look at Ohio State last year. They lost two conference games, and they ended up national champions. My fault with that argument, though, is going into this season and specifically into this game, Penn State's in a different world than Oregon and Ohio State. Oregon went undefeated in the regular season, then got their butt kicked in their first playoff game. So whether they're undefeated, one loss, two losses this season, I think Oregon fans, get us to the playoffs. You owe us a playoff win. Ohio State fans are saying, a loss or two regular season, that's irrelevant, except Michigan. Go win us another national championship. I think Penn State has a lot more to prove in the regular season. They have to win. We said either Oregon or Ohio State, and Oregon was the one. So it comes down to Penn State goes 10-2 this year, loses to Oregon, loses to Ohio State. What should the reaction be?
Boy, that's a philosophical question on a
I went deep on you, Dustin.
You did. I think there is something for Penn State, but ultimately, if they were to get back to the semifinals or maybe even make it to the championship game, do you really care? I mean, that's a legitimate question. I would say no. I mean, there were and I know on the basketball side, I'm just going to make this as a comparison. There was a year when Purdue won the Big Ten championship, lost both games to Indiana that year, which is a big deal in the state, but won the Big Ten. And the reaction was, we don't care. We won a championship, right?
Yes.
I think that has to be your mentality. As long as you get into the playoff, I think what makes this frustrating is you only have so many opportunities to prove yourself. And the fact that it's the wideout game, and this was the first real game Penn State has played. Like, they had the entire offseason. They had the entire the first 3 weeks they could have been preparing for this game, the off week, you know, all this stuff. I think that's what makes this even more frustrating. I think Penn State fans they want to be on the same tier as Ohio State, Oregon, and to a degree Michigan, and I feel like they, unless they win some of these games, they don't feel like they belong up there.
And I don't think they do. And, you know, one of my colleagues, we did our picks for this game going into it, and he picked Oregon to win. And I kind of looked at him and he said, Jim, I just reached a point. Mm-hmm. At what point do you say they lose every one of these? How can you have confidence in them winning? And it's a good point. It's reached the point, and I think this one was the one where they had everything go their way leading up to the game. Oregon is traveling the length of the country. Penn State had the bye week. They were coming into this healthy because of that out-of-conference schedule. It was a night game. It was a whiteout game. The crowd, Dustin, the result disappointing to folks. Don't blame this on Penn State fans. They were there. They were loud. They created the right atmosphere. Everything was set up for success for this team. So that's why, as much as I don't look at the Fire Franklin chance as productive in any way,
yeah,
I get it, though. I truly, truly get it. This one was frustrating. All right, Dustin. Quarter four, how about we there is a world that exists beyond this Penn State-Oregon game, is there not?
I think there is, yeah.
How about we talk about that when we come back?
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Whether a department outing, entertaining your clients, or reconnecting with your family and friends, let Revel XP take the hassle out of tailgating. Simply show up and immerse yourself in the tailgating experience. Full service includes bellhops helping upon arrival and tear down when you're ready to leave. Revel XP elevates your tailgate. Reach out to us directly at 814-933-4100 or go to revelxp.com for more info.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim. He's Dustin. Dustin, we spent the first three quarters talking Penn State, Oregon, and I'm hearing this, and you got to tell me if this is true or not. There were actually other college football games played this past weekend. Is that true?
You know what? That has been confirmed. There were a few other games in the Big Ten that were played and across the country.
Get out. I find hard to believe, but I have evidence of it. I went to ESPN's website, and there were scores of other games. So we do have to look at it. And a couple interesting games, because I want to hit you also with some of the national games. The games that I'm looking at in the Big Ten, Indiana did go to Iowa, and they survived a rock fight with Iowa.
Yeah, and Iowa had the lead in that. They were up 13-10 at one point, had an opportunity. I think they had an interception late in that game, if I remember correctly, or in the fourth quarter, and it looked like it was going to be end of the game, and Iowa was going to pull off the upset. Their quarterback gets hurt. Indiana takes advantage and get a 20-15 win. And I'm not going to get into the specifics of that game, but I think that is a bigger game for Indiana's mentality more than anything, because they've gone into a hostile environment, got a win. They have to go to Oregon, and later they'll play at Penn State. If they lose that game, and they're going to be, which I think the Penn State and Oregon games are going to be close games, all of a sudden they think, okay, this is what happened at Iowa. We were fighting, and then we made some mistakes. And I think that mental thing, but the fact that they overcame it, I think that bodes well for them. Not saying they're going to win, but I think that they will have a little bit more confidence going into hostile environments down the road, like Autzen Stadium and Beaver Stadium.
West Shore home field at Beaver Stadium. Anyway. what impresses me is this game, it was 10-10 after three quarters. That's what Iowa wanted.
Yes.
This was their style game. That's how Iowa will win a game like this, to play it in the teens, and Indiana still found a way to win. To me, that's a sign of a good team. Very different game, but also interesting, was USC at Illinois. It was the question, could USC travel and win? Could Illinois come back after that shellacking against Indiana? And so this was kind of a prove it game for these two teams. And credit to Illinois, they came out of it with the late field goal to win. Both quarterbacks throwing for over 300 yards in this game, Dustin.
Yeah, I mean, this was, you mentioned it, it was basically the complete opposite. If you liked points, I mean, 34-32, really, really fun game. I was listening to this one on the radio, actually. I wasn't able to sit down and watch it, but I was listening to it on the radio. And Illinois, I think they could have crumbled, and I think a lot of people thought, you know, how do you respond when you play a ranked opponent after getting beat by 50-plus points? And I was thoroughly impressed. And then I went back and, you know, watched some of the game the other night. And Luke Altmaier is the real deal. As much as they struggled against Indiana, he still has 11 interceptions, 72% completion rate, no interceptions this season. Just a really impressive performance. And for USC, I mean, I know they beat Purdue a few weeks ago, but it's the same old thing. When they go on the road, they're playing these really close games and can't finish the deal. And, I know they're 4-1. There's a lot of season left, but they've got some tough game. They've got Michigan. They'll play Notre Dame at one point. They got some tough games. Just kind of, you know, what's the record that they have to get to keep Lincoln Riley in town? Because it hasn't gone particularly well the last few years.
Well, there's games, and we did this specifically on our shows in the off season, Dustin, as we looked at the schedule. And there were certain games that are the ones that, you know what, if you're Indiana and Illinois, when you play each, that's the game you've got to win. If, mm-hmm. you know, with Indiana, because they still have Iowa, Oregon, Penn State. If you're Illinois and USC, this is a game for Illinois to have any shot at making the playoffs, getting to where they want to be. This was a must-win game. This is a differentiator kind of game, Dustin.
Yeah. Do you know what's interesting? I legitimately don't know the answer to this question. If Illinois went 11-1, that would include a win over Ohio State, by the way. I mean, I would think they're in, but 63-10 is so ugly, Jim.
Well, is it as ugly as a loss to Northern Iowa? Or Northern Illinois, rather, like Notre Dame
really,
had a year ago.
Really, really, I hate when you bring up good points, Jim. Really good point there. that's excellent. And I think Illinois would lean on the crutch a little bit of they had basically their entire secondary was out for that Indiana game.
Well, I don't think when you lose that badly, I don't care how many injuries you have. It just you can't justify losing that.
Well, I'm going to say I think – if they were healthy, they probably still lose that game by 3 touchdowns, and then you can scrap it away and say they were the better team. They played at home. They beat it. You know, they beat.
Yeah.
I don't know if they were at full strength if they lose by 50 points. Is all I'm saying.
I find it hard to see a Big Ten team or a Southeast Conference team go 11-1 and not make the playoffs, especially if you have a win. If you have a win against Ohio State. Now, I think the more relevant question could be a 10-2 Illinois. And it's something you and I discussed in the break a bit. You know, does a 10-2 Penn State get mm-hmm. the benefit of the doubt? And after all the bitching and moaning the Southeast Conference did in the offseason, you know, that committee's going to crumble. They're just going to crumble and – they'll give the 10-2 SEC team the benefit of the doubt, if not a 9-3 Southeast Conference team. I truly believe that, Dustin.
I agree with you.
Let's move on. Nationally, it was kind of an interesting, besides Penn State losing, there were two other top five teams losing, LSU and Georgia. And we also had Florida State go down. It was interesting. Florida State was putting themselves in the great position, and then they lose to Virginia, which, by the way, really just the ACC, boy, other than Miami, they're struggling.
It's a mess. And I believe Florida State and Miami play this weekend, correct?
Yes.
So there we go. If Florida State beats Miami, then all of a sudden, I don't want to say it's an even bigger mess, but then it all of a sudden, like, yeah, I think the ACC is going to be a one bid league, but
I think it has to be. But here's a interesting little scheduling tidbit for you. Miami does play Florida State this week. Do you know how many ranked teams Miami plays after Florida State?
I'm going to guess zero.
You would be correct, sir. Yep.
Sure.
Zero.
Makes sense.
So if they beat Florida State, it almost seems like they've got the conference locked up already, and we're in the first week of October.
Unless Mario Cristobal doesn't want to kneel it again and decides he wants to fumble and create some excitement late in the game, right? When they're playing Georgia Tech or somebody.
And
let me just throw this. Ahead. Georgia Tech survived, which I know they're not flashy and sexy, but Georgia Tech is still undefeated in that league too.
Well, I have to look at the Miami schedule again, but is Georgia Tech ranked? If they're ranked, they're not playing Miami.
I believe they are. I think they're like in the 20s, maybe. I don't remember their specific ranking, but they just survived. They were down by like 20 points to Wake Forest and came back and won.
What I did check on, I forgot about Georgia Tech, but when I looked at Miami's schedule, there was nobody that was ranked. I don't know if you could find it real fast, but they also do not have Clemson. I know it's 1-3 Clemson, but it's still Clemson. And they don't have Virginia, who beat Florida State last week. So they
do not play Georgia Tech, but they do, and we'll see what happens. Let's see. Sorry, I'm not trying to derail too fast here. So they could play. Virginia plays Louisville this week. If Louisville wins that game, they'll be 5-0, and then Louisville probably would be ranked. So there's a chance that they play one more ranked team this season.
What is it you said to me? I hate when you make a good point there. you ruined my narrative.
I'm sorry.
Let's move on. We also had Ole Miss. Now, they're a ranked Ole Miss team. They beat number 4 LSU. I had some people tell me they thought LSU might be the best team in the country. What this might mean is just some more chaos in the Southeast Conference, Dustin.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly adds another wrinkle to the mix. I don't like when people – I mean, I understand why people do this. I wish we would wait until November to start with the best team in the country sort of narrative, because to me, this sort of thing happens all the time where we see upsets. Like, that's what makes college football great. But you got to remember that Ole Miss, Lane Kiffin in particular, has had games. Now, I don't think they're going to lose to Washington State in a couple weeks, but no, Lane Kiffin is notorious for having a big win and then dropping a game or two that he's not supposed to at some point in the season. I think Ole Miss is very good. I think they'll be a challenger for the college football playoff, but this is a team. They have to go on the road and play Georgia. They have to go on the road and play Oklahoma. Outside of that, it's a favorable schedule, but I'm not ready to say they're the best team in the country. I think they're a playoff contender.
No. What I mean, people have said going into that this past week that they thought LSU might be the best team in the country. Ole Miss, you know, losing games that you might not have expected, that just speaks to the Southeast Conference's depth, Dustin. So, sure. Which you obviously can't appreciate. We also had Alabama, who looked so bad, losing to Florida State early in the season. They went into Georgia, which is unusual. Do you know the last time they played at Georgia?
2020?
2015. 10 years. It's been 10 years since they played Georgia at Georgia in the regular season. So
2020 must have been at Alabama.
But they went in and they beat Georgia, which, again, speaks to Southeast Conference depth.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I would not have picked Alabama to win that game, especially how they looked against Florida State. But that's starting to look like maybe it was I don't know about one off, but it seems like Alabama's really gotten their stuff together after that week one loss.
I think that they did. And, you know, they are relevant again with that win. We're not going to see that, you know, Georgia or that kind of team that we go undefeated. I don't think there is a dominant team in college football this year, Dustin. I think we saw what that was like a year ago when Alabama and Georgia both came back down to earth. Anyway, that's got to be the last word. Thank you, Dustin. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Whether a department outing, entertaining your clients, or reconnecting with your family and friends, let Revel XP take the hassle out of tailgating. Simply show up and immerse yourself in the tailgating experience. Full service includes bellhops helping upon arrival and tear down when you're ready to leave. Revel XP elevates your tailgate. Reach out to us directly at 814-933-4100 or go to revelxp.com for more info.